State Representative Dan Cahill is joining us. And Dan, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Bill, it's great. We're all in our own bunkers today. Usually I get to do this in person, so appreciate you accommodating us.
Dan, I have some what we call file photos for the Post. You're looking pretty good. Do you still look good now?
Is it the one where I'm on a Malibu beach with a surfboard and long, wavy hair? That's the one I prefer to use.
You know, I did not find that one. I have another one. I have one with you in the office, and it's a very nice picture, I think, anyway. So.
Okay, yeah, you can use that one.
All right. We will not be doing a photo shoot today for this Post. Dan, what's happening at the State House? Give us an update.
Well, Bill, I mean, last time we spoke, neither you or I could ever predict where we would be come April 3rd, 2020, and the aftermath of COVID-19. And clearly this pandemic has permeated to every nook and cranny of life and society. And at the State House, no different. We are trying to deal with the health, the health fallout, the economic fallout, the political fallout, all of the fallouts you could possibly imagine are happening all at once. And it's been a trying time, but one that I think Massachusetts is tackled head on. Every day is a different day. You're seeing different orders and different executive orders coming out from Governor Baker. That's been a steady hand during this. The House leadership and in the Senate, we've been trying to crank out legislation on a bipartisan matter because we need unanimous consent to try to address concerns with our healthcare workers, our grocery workers, folks who are small business owners that are going to see their businesses, maybe not recover from this. Workers that are out of work, workers that are in dangerous conditions. It's like all of the above, Bill. But we're dealing with it.
Yeah.
And we're not out of the woods yet.
Dan, I imagine I believe a lot of the work that you're doing in the legislature, or a piece of it, is procedural. In other words, the governor wants to do an executive order, and some things do need to get approved. Is that a piece of the business?
Yeah, I mean, we have every April, everyone knows, we typically are beginning our debate for a fiscal year budget. That's not going to happen. So there's some ongoing discussions of how we address that. In Massachusetts, you can move forward with a 1/12 budget. But then the question is, what are we looking for as an economic forecast? What are we looking for tax receipts? I mean, we've extended the tax deadline. We're not collecting some local state taxes. My hat's off to Chairman Aaron Michaelwitz and his team on trying to piece together a state budget that is not on firm ground, because the numbers keep on shifting, or we don't know what the numbers are going to be. So we are working very closely together again with our governor and the other branch, and some of these things require legislation, and some can be done, some immediate changes can be done through executive order, and we're just working on trying to figure out what those are and the pressure points and alleviating the pressure.
Dan, I know that cities and towns are worried about their budgets and planning for the budgets, just as you were mentioning it with the state budgets. They all come in line together. I would assume there's going to have to be something where all of a sudden everything just gets pushed back month to month to month.
I don't know how we don't do that. Like I said, Bill, on a daily basis, anyone tries to do a financial forecast, they might as well just scribble down some notes on a Post-it and throw it away the next day, because it's going to change. So these budgets coming up are going to be very fluid. They're going to change probably a lot. We're going to allow a lot of flexibilities for municipalities to address those issues, and we have so far with some election issues and some public open meeting laws and other things that, because we know that government needs to continue to work. But it's really hard when, Lynn City Hall, I just went to Lynn City Hall, you can't get in. It's not open to the public. And so now I'm calling folks to come out and drop me off things, and I'm dropping them off things, and we're sanitizing. It's not an easy way to run a government, but it's still functional. And the mayor's there, and the city council's doing a great job. And a lot of our nonprofits have really stepped up in the wake of a situation where they're not having the revenues that they're used to having coming in. So it's amazing.
Dan, what are you hearing from City Hall and from Lynn?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of things. Housing advocates are getting or are very concerned about folks being displaced in an already difficult region for housing, coupled with folks who are in my city, Lynn, a lot of working class folks, a lot of independently employed folks, people who work with their hands, and they're out of work. So that means they're not getting, for the most part, if they do qualify for unemployment, they're getting a modified amount of money. The rents haven't been adjusted, obviously. I mean, there are leases that are in place, and then I'm getting calls from landlords concerned of what steps should they be taking going forward. They obviously don't want to lose tenants, but at the same time, they have mortgages that are due. It's a mess. And in Lynn, you know, the city has tried to maintain some levels of food assistance for the elderly, for folks who are just absolutely flat out broke now and need food for themselves and for their families. They've done tremendous jobs with food drives. Councilor Sear and the city council have got us all on the same page with donating money and food to folks that need it. And the mayor's done a great job. He's trying to find points where people are congregating, and you know, he's shutting them down. He's making sure that people are social distancing.
Dan, I want to just follow up on the business piece to this, because this is just so huge. I mean, you go up and down the streets in Lynn, and you know, whether it's a barber shop or a salon or any of those businesses, they all have to be closed.
Initially, it was a very tense situation, because when this first hit and we were telling people you got to close, a lot of folks were like, well, you know, I'll keep open. You know, you had some shops that were putting blackout paper against their windows so we couldn't see that they were open. And, you know, the police and the health department under Michelle Desmaris and a few other, you know, elected officials were really out patrolling and policing these things. In some cases, I knew the councilors were going in and shutting down businesses themselves. But since more information has become available, people realized that this was not just something that's going to blow over, that this was a catastrophic pandemic. And they've been really good about ensuring that they've closed their businesses down. But still, you know, there are other businesses that are open, grocery stores. We have grocery workers that are at risk, and we have healthcare workers at Lynn Community Health Center and other healthcare providers that are at risk. It's, you know, no one's 100% safe from this.
And we certainly do appreciate those people that are on the front lines, especially that last group that you mentioned, Dan, that are showing up for work and doing what they need to do to keep things a tiny bit normal.
And, Bill, the hardest part about this job, you know, we get a lot of constituent calls. Clearly, we're getting a higher volume of constituent responses and calls and questions and concerns more than usual. It's the calls from family members of healthcare workers and grocery workers that are saying, my loved one's at risk. They're coming home after working hard. They're putting me at risk and my family at risk. What's the state going to do to make sure that they are not, you know, contaminated, that they themselves have not been exposed or exposing others? It's a really hard question to answer, and people are really, really scared, as they should.
You know, you bring up a point, and Dan, I've done so many of these interviews in the last several weeks, and every time it seems like I look at things just a little bit differently, and you know, I think about the grocery store workers, for example, and you think about them personally. But you know, until you just mentioned it now, you know, they're obviously walking back into homes where there's multi generations and, you know, elders, and obviously that's a prime target for this virus.
100%, and they need the money, so they're working. I mean, it's an hourly wage job. They need the job. A lot of those folks are cashiers and not management. And people stocking shelves, they need that income. They need those jobs. And a lot of times they're supporting their families on those jobs themselves. So they are walking back into, you know, an apartment that has, like you said, multi-generational folks in there. And I don't know if everyone's following, like, a decontamination process. Like, I was watching on 60 Minutes, and they had a physician about his decontamination process with his family. I said, that's pretty intricate. I suspect not everyone's following the same level as, you know, as a surgeon in New York City is, as opposed to someone who's working at a grocery store who's tired and just is home and maybe not be aware of all the facts on how to decontaminate. And that's our our greatest fear is that this virus starts to permeate into our very densely populated areas of the city, where you have, you know, multi units in a building, and this thing could just go through it like you wouldn't believe. And we are experiencing some buildings in our city where folks are being quarantined, and there's some indication of coronavirus, and it's a real public health crisis when we start getting into these huge multifamily units, and we're trying really hard to make sure that doesn't happen.
Dan, I'll close it out with the question, how are the Cahills, and then is there anything else you want to mention while you're here with us here today?
You know, fortunately for us, my wife's a public school teacher in Lynn, so my kids, or unfortunately for my kids, my wife is a public teacher in Lynn Public Schools, because it's not vacation for them. They start in the morning, we have a routine, they have breakfast, and my wife teaches them for several hours, and they have some breaks in between. But it's hard. They're inside. We try to get them out as much as we can. The weather has not been very cooperative. I'm out of the house generally because I'm still kind of doing stuff. So that's kind of a sensitive situation as well. But we're doing what best we can. A lot of families are in a much, much worse position than the Cahills. So we're very mindful of that, and we're trying to find ways to help other folks out.
Dan, always good talking with you. Be safe, and good news. Good to hear about your family and so on. And anyway, and again, thanks for your time and joining us and updating us from Lynn and the State House.
Bill, I appreciate you doing this. And remember, Bill, make sure you wash your hands.
I did, and we're practicing social distancing by doing this interview over the phone.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And folks, go to www.mass.gov for all your updates on COVID-19 with respect to Massachusetts, as well as links to necessary resources. So thank you, Bill, again, and be safe, please.
You got it.
Dan Cahill, State Representative, City of Lynn, here with us on MSONewsSports.com.